Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spangin. On today's show... A shade over 2 weeks before Israel's Groundhog Day election, we're dedicating this episode of Haaretz Weekly to the big question of the day. Is Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu laying the groundwork for his next career, either as a TV critic or as a Donald Trump impersonator? In a series of furious tweets and Facebook Live posts, Bibi launched a tirade of opprobrium against HBO. Yes, that's HBO, not the PLO, for what he called its anti-Semitic series, Our Boys. He also called on Israelis to boycott the Israeli television companies Channel 12 and Keshet for their role in producing the show. He may have given away his true motives, however, by also slamming Channel 12 over its coverage of the criminal cases in which he is a suspect. And all of this comes, of course, after a week of tensions on Israel's northern border and a war of words between Jerusalem, Beirut, Hezbollah, and inevitably, Tehran. Joining me on the pod today to discuss all of this and more is Anshul Pfeffer. How are you this afternoon, Anshul?
Not bad, Simon. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Anshul, before we tuck into today's smorgasbord, I'm going to ask producer Lee to play the promo for Haaretz Insider, our exclusive online event for subscribers. Hi, listener. If you're a subscriber to Haaretz.com, we'd like to invite you to an exclusive online Q&A with Chemi Shalev and Alison Kaplan-Summer. On September the 15th, 2 days before Israelis vote in a do-over election, Chemi and Alison will be in the studio to answer your questions live. That's September the 15th, exclusively for subscribers to Haaretz.com. Log on to the website for details. So, Anshul, let's start with the North, and hopefully let's reassure our listeners that Israel isn't on the verge of a third Lebanon war. There were reports just before we started recording that Israel has shelled positions just over the border with Lebanon. So, what's going on the Northern Front?
Well, we're not quite clear yet exactly what happened with the most recent shelling reported. Maybe by the time this podcast is out, there probably will be some more clarity. But generally speaking, we have been waiting for a week now, ever since the unexplained explosions earlier on Sunday morning a week ago in Beirut, for some kind of response from Hezbollah, because this is... unlike the hundreds of strikes we've had over the last 8 years of the war in Syria, this happened on Lebanese soil. And this is something which, from the point of view of Hezbollah, is a crossing of the red line.
As opposed to on Syrian soil,
Israel and Hezbollah, and Hezbollah and Iran, there's been a war, basically, for a shadow war for 8 years, occurring on Syrian soil. And that's sort of been the ground rule. So it's on Syrian soil, it's not within Lebanon, because Hezbollah is not only Iran's most potent proxy, it's also a Lebanese political party. So they kind of observe the ground rules that the war won't be on Lebanese soil and won't give a reason for Hezbollah to attack Israel from Lebanon. So there's two possible wars happening simultaneously. The one which is causing Israel to reinforce its forces, its units. We've seen artillery going up north on Shabbat, and we know there's already Iron Dome being deployed there for the last week, and various other military units reinforced there. All these things are happening because there is a top alert now for something happening from Lebanon, and Nasrallah is sort of committed to it because he's given these speeches. He said Israel can't attack here, but at the same time, and this is really interesting, we're seeing Nasrallah ramping down the level of the threats. He's given a number of speeches, and there have been other statements coming from senior Hezbollah leaders, and every time we're hearing, yes, we will obviously attack Israel, but it'll be measured, it'll be the time of our choosing. And in his last speech last night, Nasrallah even spoke about the important thing is that Israel won't fly in Lebanese airspace. So it almost sounds as if he would prefer just to shoot down a drone and have a sort of a bloodless retaliation, which wouldn't necessitate Israel retaliating in fashion. One thing is very clear: Nasrallah doesn't want a war. Nasrallah, both as a Lebanese politician, doesn't want to give Israel a reason to have to attack Lebanese infrastructure and cause any destruction there. It won't be good for him as a Lebanese politician. Mm. As a military leader, his forces are not ready for another war. They've had 8 years of bloodletting in Syria. They've been on the arguably victorious side. They've helped the Assad regime mm-hmm. murder tens or hundreds of thousands of Lebanese civilians and have kept Assad in power and helped him recapture most of Lebanese territory, but it's come at a price. There's been hundreds of Hezbollah fighters have been killed, thousands wounded. The organization needs a period to rebuild its military infrastructure. This is not the time when Hezbollah wants to go to war with Israel.
Mm. Could that also explain why Nasrallah said that Hezbollah's response would be anywhere along the northern border, whereas in the past he said we will attack Israeli and Jewish targets anywhere in the world?
This is a matter of Lebanese sovereignty, which Nasrallah wants to be the guarantor of. Yeah. So it means that we probably won't see another case of Hezbollah blowing up a bus full of Israeli tourists like we saw a few years ago in Bulgaria. It's almost a symbolic attack. It's much more the symbolism for Nasrallah is much more important than killing a certain number of Israelis or hitting a certain kind of target. He wants to make a point.
How does all this tie into what appears to be some flexibility, some movement on the part of Donald Trump vis-a-vis Iran?
Well, that's a great question, because we're talking here about a wide range of battlefields on which Israel and Iran are fighting this shadow war. Lebanon is one, Syria is another. Mm. According to Pentagon officials quoting the New York Times a week and a half ago, Iraq is another, and Netanyahu has done nothing to dispel those reports. He hasn't actually confirmed them, but he said in a number of places that Israel is fighting Iran in lots of places. Seem to be referring to Iraq as well. So all these battlefields are raging. Now, some of them have been going on, like I said, for 8 years. Syria has been going on for 8 years. But the tempo seems to have increased in recent weeks. And you could ascribe this perhaps to a certain fear that Trump may suddenly engage with the Iranians. Last Sunday, we know that when Mohammad Zarif, the Iranian foreign minister, suddenly arrived in Biarritz at the G8 summit, mm-hmm. Netanyahu was very displeased at that development. He was worried that there may suddenly be a meeting between Trump and Zarif, according to to Barak Ravid, formerly of this parish, Channel 13's diplomatic correspondent. Netanyahu was trying to catch Trump on the phone, and the aides were saying, sorry, he's in meetings. And this was obviously a very uncomfortable day for Netanyahu. But in the end, there was no meeting. And it seems that there won't be a meeting in September at the UN. It's been ruled out by the Iranians because apparently the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei is against any kind of meeting between Trump and his representatives. But the worrying thing about it is it's the Iranians who are preventing the meeting, not Trump.
Right.
If it was up to Trump.
He still wants to make Iran rich again.
He wants to make Iran rich and great again, and suddenly he wants to show that he's the greatest deal maker. And all of a sudden, this wonderful relationship and coordination that Netanyahu has with Trump doesn't seem so seamless anymore.
Mm. So how does all this tie into the upcoming election, Anshul? Is the northern tension on the Iranian front just part of Bibi's strategy, allowing him to dictate the agenda?
Well, another thing we have to keep in mind is that Netanyahu, and not just Netanyahu, the Israeli security establishment is pushing back against an Iranian regional campaign. It's not just about politics and elections and about whether or not Trump will meet Rouhani. There is a real issue here of Iran pushing on multiple fronts. We mentioned three of them. You could add Yemen, and you could add Gaza, where Iran is bankrolling Hamas and Islamic Jihad at the same time. So all these things are very real, and Israel does have to push back against this. The question is, to what level, and where are the best places for Israel to choose its battles? And a very important question is, how much should Israel be publicizing? And this is where we get into the realms of electoral considerations. There are people who think that Netanyahu is doing the right thing. And the consensus in the security establishment seems to be Netanyahu is doing the right things. Whether or not he's right in publicizing some of these things, for example, last week when they publicized their strike against the joint Iranian-Hezbollah team, which were trying to launch killer drones against Israel, on Saturday night, was it right for Israel to immediately come out with that, with all those details? That people are less sure about. And there is some slight suspicion that one of the considerations here could be the upcoming election. Netanyahu's treading a very fine line. He doesn't, just like Nasrallah, he does not need a war on the eve of election. He doesn't generally like big wars. He likes these pinpoint special operations, you know, with using elite units or the Air Force. He doesn't like mobilizing.
When you say he doesn't need a war, he doesn't need it to get re-elected, you mean? Or he doesn't need it?
It probably wouldn't be the best thing for him if when it comes to re-election. He wants to be seen as the tough guy, but also be seen as the guy guaranteeing the peace. A strong piece of deterrence, as he calls it. But still, I don't think Netanyahu feels bad at the fact that on his watch, Israel hasn't embarked on a major war in Lebanon. I think that's the way he wants to keep it, certainly on the eve of election. You know, we had this kind of weird situation yesterday on Shabbat in the Galilee, where tens of thousands of Israelis were enjoying the last weekend of the summer holiday, going around the rivers and the guest houses and the restaurants and the vineyards and having a great time in what is probably one of the more pleasant parts of Israel in the summer heat and in general also. And at the same time, just beyond at the end of the road, there were all these mass units of the IDF, leave cancelled for all the combat units, preparing for something coming from Hezbollah. Netanyahu wants Israelis to be able to carry on having their holidays and then to come back now at the beginning of September into the election campaign and feel confident and secure. He doesn't want them to feel that they can't go and have fun because Nasrallah may be launching his rockets.
One thing that does appear to be very much part of Netanyahu's re-election campaign is his attack on journalists. Would I be wrong in saying that he's intensified not only the frequency of these attacks, but the level of the rhetoric? I mean, he accused Channel 12 of carrying out a terror attack against democracy, right?
Well, the tone is certainly very severe, but I remind you, 5 months ago, the massive billboards on Ayalon Highway with the pictures of various journalists and saying they will not decide. So this hate campaign of Netanyahu against serious journalists who are doing their job and criticizing the government and criticizing him and revealing new details of the investigations against him, that's not new. Netanyahu's did that in the last election. He's done it in the past. Netanyahu has a number of hate figures, and we know them well. Israeli Arabs, who he's always gunning for them, the courts, the so-called mythological left, and the media. And these are all hate figures which he uses to rally his votes, to drum up the base. And he has a real worry here, because we know from the data that of the various parts of the Israeli electorate, the typical Likud voter is less motivated to go and vote, A, because they kind of think that the right wing will win anyway, and B, because they're a bit tired of Netanyahu, except the really hardcore Netanyahu supporters. The slightly less hardcore of the right wing, a lot of them think, oh, I can't go and vote for a non-right wing party. I can't vote for someone but Likud. But I don't really want to vote for Netanyahu again. Netanyahu needs to make them afraid of the left coming to power again. That's why he needs to demonize the courts and to demonize the left. And demonizing the media is part of that. It's not a new trick for Netanyahu. You mentioned a few things which he hasn't done in the past. You know, he used this HBO Keshet co-production as a specific issue to make a big deal out of it, and he didn't even start it. It started from various social media accounts and columns written in the right wing media attacking our boys, and he latched on. His team is very attuned to this, these kind of things, and knows this is the kind of stuff that we should be working on. And as often happens, the first sign we saw that Netanyahu would use this in his campaign came through his son Junior's Twitter account, which is very often the place where they float these trial balloons, and if it sticks, then Netanyahu Senior will go with them. In the way that they've targeted specifically one reporter on Channel 10, Guy Pereg, the crime reporter of Channel 10, who is almost every night on the main news show on Channel 12 reading out protocols of various testimonies.
Well, this is the point, isn't it? This is the point. I mean, beyond the coincidental airing of Our Boys on Channel 12, he's going for the Channel 12 news division. He doesn't care about HBO. He cares about Channel 12 and its revelations about the criminal investigations.
He cares about this nightly drip of new revelations from the investigations coming out. It's bad for him. It creates the kind of framing of the election which he wants to avoid. There's an election over him, over his corruption. He wants the election to be over the things we said before about how he's strong against Iran, how he's keeping Israelis safe. He doesn't want this to be every single night about new details of how he made these allegedly fraudulent deals with Bezeq, Israel's biggest telecommunication company. So all these things are playing into it, but it's a convenient way for Netanyahu to frame the opposition as being part of this anti-Semitic, disloyal media machine. Look what they did with our boys, how they smeared our boys. Obviously, you can't trust them when they report about me. He's done something else, which is also almost unique in his case. He's gone for the owners of Channel 10. It's true that in the past, he went for one publisher, the publisher of Yedioth Ahronot, but that was an old vendetta that's been ongoing for 20 years between Netanyahu and Noni Moses, the publisher of Yedioth Ahronot. He went for two of the main shareholders of Channel 12 in his last Facebook Live or whatever it was, kind of the way, whatever way he used to bypass the media last time. And it's interesting because those are two business people who are known to actually have good relationships with him. So he seems to be telling them, look, you know, we've worked well, especially with Tshuva, who he had a lot of meetings to leading up to the natural gas deal, which was a sweetheart deal for Tshuva. He's also putting them all, he's saying, you know, don't think I'm missing the fact that you're shareholders of Channel 12, Channel 12, which is attacking me, Channel 12, which is producing anti-Semitic, so-called anti-Semitic dramas. This is, you know, this is Netanyahu putting them on warning and saying, look, if I get reelected, you're still going to need me.
It does feel a bit like a scorched earth policy from Netanyahu. In the past, maybe there were some lines he wouldn't cross. Now it feels like anything goes to stay in power.
I don't think it's a scorched earth policy. I think quite the opposite. I think he is looking beyond the election in the hope, for, as far as he's concerned, that he gets 61 seats without Lieberman and can set up a coalition. He still needs to face, he'll be facing hearings 2 weeks after that, and the whole legal process in which most people in the legal establishment believe will lead to indictments. He needs somehow to face that. And one of the things that made his life very difficult in the weeks between the April election and when he finally dissolved the Knesset was that the media were going for all the discussions going on between Netanyahu and his own Likud members and the members of other members of the coalition about the attempt to change the immunity laws, which would allow Netanyahu to somehow evade an indictment. And that attention, even if the coalition had been formed, the government would have been sworn in, was going to make it very difficult for them to pass those laws. And Netanyahu is sort of putting the media on warning now. Remember, I always win. It's not true, he doesn't always win, but that's what he's trying. That's the message he's trying to put. I always win elections. I'll be back, or, you know, Darth Vader-like. You know, you guys should be careful what I can do to you once I'm re-elected.
Presumably he was delighted with Naftali Bennett saying over the weekend that unless something extraordinary happens, he'll back immunity.
I think when he hears Naftali Bennett saying, unless something extraordinary happens, I'll back immunity, he's hearing the first part of the sentence thinking, I wonder what extraordinary thing will make Bennett not support immunity for him. I was very suspicious of Bennett.
Rightly so, one would imagine.
Well, they should all be suspicious of each other.
Did we at least enjoy the irony, Angela, of Netanyahu, who utterly rejects other people's right to carry out peaceful political boycotts, calling for a boycott of Channel 12?
I think that this whole attempt to boycott the media is once again, it's not something entirely new for Netanyahu. He's been gunning for the media basically since 1993, when the media made a big deal out of his alleged sex tape. So, you know, he always sees himself, even though he's a man who owes his entire career to the media, basically, he's always seen himself as the victim of the media, and he's tried to suppress and subvert the media in so many different ways. This is just one more episode of Netanyahu's anti-media crusade.
Just for the sake of due disclosure, I should point out that neither of us, Angel, has actually seen any of the episodes of Our Boys yet, but we will be dedicating a future episode of Haaretz Weekly to the show. Angel, we're almost out of time, but let's wrap things up with a question that hits quite close to home for us. Our colleague Yossi Werther published an article this morning, the headline of which is "Netanyahu won't rest until a journalist's blood is spilled." Is Yossi being a little hysterical here, or is this a genuine concern? Channel 12 has had to hire a bodyguard to protect the reporter, Guy Peleg, who you mentioned, who's behind all of the latest revelations that could embarrass Bibi.
I don't think Yossi is in any way hysterical. I think there's a real concern for the welfare of journalists, and you never know where this kind of thing can come from. You know, it could come from threats to a certain journalist who's reporting things about Netanyahu, but we've seen in other places, we've seen in Isawiya and East Jerusalem in recent days, a Haaretz photographer, the police threw a stun grenade at him, and other journalists from other news organizations have been arrested by the police there or been subject to police violence. And it's part of an atmosphere. When the Prime Minister talks about journalists in a certain way, then police officers on the ground will believe that they can, and even nothing, things which are not connected to Netanyahu directly, will believe they can do things. I think that the much bigger risk right now is what is Netanyahu's threats towards the shareholders of the media companies, which I mentioned before. I think that is something in which he's trying to sort of put them on the spot and make them think that most of these shareholders have other businesses, much bigger businesses than media companies, and they have their own deals to make with Netanyahu over those businesses, whether it's gas or transport or telecommunications. And for them, the thought that because they have a relatively small holding in a media company, they're jeopardizing their bigger business, that's something that's going to be at the front of their minds, and Netanyahu knows that. And that, to me, is more worrisome. I certainly don't think that anybody warning about potential violence against journalists is being hysterical. We're seeing that happen in various places of the country.
That's it, I'm afraid, Anshul. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Simon.
Thank you, too, to producer Lee. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Haaretz Weekly.